The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now I'm joined in studio by Stephanie Regan, who is a clinical psychotherapist and co-host of the Tough Love podcast. Stephanie, good morning.
Good morning. Good to see you, Pat.
The most common things that couples row about, and it's the same old.
In fact, there's some research to show that people, married couples, they can argue about the same thing over a 50-year period. Oh. Yet it gets wrapped in different things, you know, but it's the same essential point. And those of us with experience, I think we can nod to that. That can happen.
Okay, let's talk about the top five then.
Okay, exactly. So the top five really tend to be, and these are what we would call arguments. So people tend to bicker about money and finance, number one, how people save, how people spend, different habits, that kind of thing. That can be very, very important, actually, in a couple, because the way people are brought up and the kind of values that they have get shown in this sort of how they handle money and how they spend. So little conflicts come in quite a bit around that. Household responsibilities, we hear an awful lot about it. Who does the chores? Who does the cleaning? Who carries the load? We've done a lot here about that. And the mental load, and women always feeling that they're carrying more of the mental load, which I think it does bear out. But nevertheless, lots of these little issues refer to other things. There's often deeper things attached, a feeling of not being, you know, valued, not being heard, not being listened to, being perhaps, you know, in the money sense, perhaps controlled. And money can be a control factor. So arguments are important. What they are is important, and what you argue about is important. But often it's what's underneath the argument that matters as well. So the third one, number three, that comes up is intimacy and sex. And often that's much more around a kind of a mismatch of desire, or, you know, the emotional connection kind of slips away. And so the physical closeness goes. And I suppose what we always try and encourage people is, I know we've heard a lot about this in lately, which is the almost like the habit of sex. I know it's all very unromantic, but when you're in a sort of a very prolonged relationship, I think it's quite important that emotional connection, when you have problems and when you have difficulties, that you don't turn away from sex completely. Because if you do, that habit of turning away from it can really get into place. And that's a pity. So I'm just saying, with young couples or with couples who are 10 years in, 15 years in, I often find myself, like it might be post-baby, it might be post a big bereavement or something, I would find myself encouraging them to kind of get back into the groove of making time together. Because if you don't, you will lose that habit, and it's a very bad thing. And also, people are less nice to each other when the sexual has gone out the window. So
next up, number four.
Communication styles is number four. And this comes really, I suppose what happens here is the way that people sort things and the way that people tell each other things becomes a real issue. And that doesn't happen in the beginning when everybody's lovey-dovey and it's all lovely. But as you get into the bigger issues of life, having children, the schools you're going to pick, how you're going to, where you're going to spend your money, that's when these things come into play. So people, you find out how people actually sort things out. Do they insist? Do they resent it when they give in? Or do they actually collaborate and really accept that we're both different, we've both got pluses and minuses, and we're going to try and work with that? So that's important. And lastly, number five, family and children, which is the those big parenting decisions, and of course the in-law situation. How much of your family do I have to see, and all of
where do we go for Christmas?
Indeed,
that kind of thing.
All of that. We'll come back to that in 3 months.
Now some of the texts come in. Myself and himself never argue. He has to do everything my way, so there's no problems ever. Do what you're told. I myself had a similar problem with my husband. He was great for cleaning the kitchen after dinner, emptying the dishwasher or washing clothes, but didn't see the need to do the deep clean stuff like the fridge, the oven, the dusting, the toilets. Mm-hmm. It drove me daft. I now have teenagers and divide jobs between them. Then their pocket money is linked to their jobs. My sister and her husband used to constantly fight over housework. He never saw the need to clean floors, bathrooms, fridge, etc. So she got a cleaner in once a week for 3 hours. She said it was the best money ever spent, much cheaper than therapy.
Indeed, definitely cheaper
divorce.
Than therapy. I agree with you there.
Okay. There's a thing going around online at the moment of a fella eating biscuits out of a packet.
Yeah.
And there's a vacuum cleaner sucking the crumbs. And he said, this is the way my mother wants me to eat biscuits.
So clean.
So
to
clean.
Be so clean.
Do not drop a crumb.
Which is kind of what you're picking up there in that text. So it's something about, like, you know, there's a constant arguments, but should this other partner instinctively know exactly how to clean? No, I don't think so. The cleaner is obviously a great way to kind of assist with that problem. But the other is really to instruct each other and agree how you do things. But one thing I would say to you is people argue about a lot of things, but they don't come to therapy with those things. They come to therapy for different reasons, which is kind of interesting.
So why do they?
When we were
the top five?
Yes, when we were prepping this, we were thinking of the five things people argue about and the five things that people come to couples therapy with. And I think it's quite interesting that they're fairly different. You know, I mean, some similarity, if you like, but not a lot. You know, people argue about things, but really they come to therapy when they can no longer fix it, when they can't sort the argument, when the deeper issues finally come to the surface, when obviously they're, you know, so they come in this order, you know, in terms of the top reasons. Communication problems would definitely be the biggest. People come, they say, you know, he doesn't hear me anymore. She doesn't listen to me anymore. I feel she's hostile to me. He's hostile to me. It's very even, let me tell you. It's very, very non-one-sided, this. Then there will be the issue of constant arguing and not being able to resolve those arguments. So they spin around in that same argument and maybe the argument escalates and they never resolve it. They just back away from each other and they leave it. But of course, it's not resolved and it's not left. It's not over. It's left somewhere. I often say to people, when an argument is over, you almost can't remember what you argued about. And that's because it actually is resolved. But you know, when you can remember, you said this then, that's when that argument has stuck in you and it has not been resolved. So it's important.
Question here. Does the menopause lead to men straying or lead to relationship breakup? Do men understand what women are going through?
Well, I don't think they instinctively understand. I think I'm not sure that it's menopause as much as midlife. There's a lot of midlife stuff in relationships, or mid-relationship stuff, you could say, that draws people apart. I think that the issues I would see a lot, like here, you know, number two comes up as trust issues. And maybe we'll mention that and come back to the intimacy, because that's where the menopause shows up and all of that and then moving away. But if there is an infidelity, building back trust, that is number two on the list, and definitely it is a big issue, and it takes quite a long time. So when people come for couples work and it's a trust issue, it tends to take much longer, and it's very hard. It's a hard one to fix. It's not impossible, but it's a hard one to fix. And I would definitely encourage people to go to therapy for that, and that's not looking for work, you know. Secondly, then number three is intimacy and sexual concerns, and that is, you know, in the menopause, there is a shift. Every woman knows it. Every man knows it who has lived with a woman who's menopausal. But it does mean you either work this through together. I know we're back to the sexual again. But it is, of course, you know, people will stray at any time for all sorts of reasons. It's not usually because they're not having sex with their wife or partner. That's not usually the reason. It's usually something else. It's usually much more about not being heard, not feeling connected, not feeling safe, not feeling there's any fun, not feeling that they're valued anymore. And I know it's a, maybe just to say, I think men need quite a lot of that. And men seem to also get quite an amount of their, if you like, emotional fix from their partner, where women get a lot of their emotional fix from many sources. And that's an issue then if the partner in a man's life pulls away from them.
Do people sometimes argue about, you know, the changes that they are experiencing in marriage? For example, they didn't expect it to be this way.
Yeah.
Suddenly we have a toddler screaming, shouting all night long, that kind of thing. This is not the way it was supposed to be.
Yes.
Not what it says on the tin.
No, exactly. And let's be honest, it's a big wake-up call. You're, as I say, those big sleeps are over, honey. And that's how that works. But I think that I think that's an emotional maturity. I mean, I'm dealing with quite a few people at the moment where I think that is exactly the wall they've walked into, which is that there's an Instagrammable life out there of children, you know, holding hands in little frilly skirts and we're all heading to the zoo, you know, not looking at the night. You're up all night. You haven't slept all weekend. You haven't had more than 2 hours at a time. And everybody's nerves are frayed, and this is reality, and it's tough, you know. And I think that is an emotional maturity where you can suspend all your own, you know, all your own needs to be a parent. And you have to be at that stage to be a good parent. And a lot of people do struggle with that.
And yet people manage to forget the terrible twos and have another baby.
Oh, yeah. And why not? And that's what makes the world go round. And it's all worth it. I think completely worth it. I mean, you and I are at the later stages where your kids are older, much older, and where they've lives of their own and where they bring you back to share in all sorts of things. And I think it's just a lovely, you know, every stage in life, I just think is very interesting and very nice. And it's about finding that. But you do need an emotional maturity to step into those. The other times you mentioned transitions, and I just wanted to mention it. You know, we've often talked about the empty nest time. We've often talked that is a time when people, couples, face each other again very kind of toughly, and a lot of the distractions are gone, and a lot sometimes of the old wounds come back into play, and people feel I've given up too much. I meet that quite a lot. Couples, you know, where they're fighting all the time, but actually there's a lot of anger in one party. They feel they've given up too much, and now they're 50, and now they're annoyed. And well, you know, you made your choices, so you have to take responsibility for the choices you are making in life. It's not up to somebody else to make you happy. It's up to you to make you happy.
Now, therapy obviously is what helps. You do. Does it work?
Yes, it works. Of course it works. And I would say that with, you know, I mean, I'm committed to therapy for 35 years and it works. It doesn't work for everybody, but it does work. I think in a couple way, I often say to people, even if you are going to break up, I would say to you, have a few sessions of therapy so that you end up well, you can break well, you can forgive each other, you can understand each other. So what happens in therapy really is, you know, there's a kind of a sort of a start, middle and sort of longer phase. And I work in a short frame. So at this stage of life, I just like to get in, give you straight guidance and say, this is where the issue is and this is where you need to work. And but if you're in a longer term situation, what really we try and do is we try and help you to hear each other. We try and help you to understand how it is for each party, and we don't let you talk over each other. So I'm the interpreter, if you like, of that. And then then what I do is I help you to see what you can do and how being able to be more emotionally aware of what's going on for each of you, how you can solve problems, how you can solve arguments, how you can be more mindful, how you can connect more. That's the purpose. That's what we try and do. And it does work.
On that note, Stephanie Regan, a clinical psychotherapist and co-host of the Tough Love podcast, thank you very much.
Thank you, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.